So the Mishnah says the following: Kama Malkiruso. How many lashes do we give the person who violated a law? Again, we've mentioned many times in the past that in order to be chayv malchus, you need Adam and Hasra, the witnesses. They gave him a proper warning. So the Mishnah says, Arboim Chaser Achas. Very strange phrase. I mean, why not just say Shlosha Vitesha, 39? No, you say 40 minus 1. And the reason why the Mishnah chooses that language deliberately is because of the Pasuk. Shenemar, it says, and I'm going to read part of the pasuk that's not here in the Mishnah. V'hiko lefanov kidei rishaso b'mispar arboim yakenu. There are two psukim here, and what the Mishnah does is it really reads these two psukim in one breath, as if they were connected to each other. The first pasuk says v'hiko lefanov kidei rishaso b'mispar, and it really doesn't spell out how many malchus you would actually give the person. And then in the very next pasuk it says arboim yakeno, which means 40. But what we're going to do is we're going to take that word b'mispar at the end of the previous pasuk, and we're going to attach it to the word arboim at the beginning of the following pasuk, and it's b'mispar arboim. B'mispar arboim means like 40, or rounded out to 40, but it's not exactly 40. Approaches 40. And the Mishnah the Torah itself uses that language deliberately to tell us that, as if to say he should really be getting 40 lashes, we'll let him off the hook by subtracting one lash, and we'll reduce it to 39. So what we're reading it is as b'mispar arboim. And then the Mishnah says, minayin shu samuch l'arboim. And how do we know that samuch l'arboim means that the number that follows it, minyan shu samuch l'arboim. Okay, you have to conjugate that word properly, not minayin, but minyan. Minyan shu samuch l'arboim means accounting that's close to 40, but not quite 40. And what number is close to 40, but not quite 40? That's 39. That's the opinion of the Tanakhama, the Chacham. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Arboim Shlemos Hu Loke. So then it's very strange, because the Pasuk seems to indicate close to 40, but not 40. Unless I just separate the two Psukim, and then I read Arboim Yaken as a separate verse, not connected to the previous verse. So what Rabbi Yehuda does is, he wants to enjoy both. On the one hand, he wants to connect the word b'mispar at the end of the first pasuk with arboim in the beginning of the second pasuk. So he's going to mete out 39 malchus. But at the same time, since the Torah says arboim yakenu, he wants to fulfill that literally. So what he's going to do is he's going to create two different categories of malchus. There's going to be one category called 39 malchus, and there's another category called 1. 39 plus 1 equals 40. And therefore, Rabbi Yehuda says the following: V'heichan hu loke es hayisera. And now that the Torah, in addition to b'mispar arboim, which means close to arboim, added the word arboim, so there's something special about that 40th makah. And what is that? Bein k'seifav. Now, for some odd reason, one out of 40 malchus is going to be given between his two shoulders, literally. Now, what does that mean? What's unique about this last makah? All the other makahs, let's say, are given on the back and on the front, around the abdomen area, the stomach, as we'll learn. This one, just the one single makah, the number 40, is going to be given in the front and high up on his body. Very strange halacha, no? But this is Rabbi Yehuda's method of reconciling the b'mispar arboim with the word arboim. Okay. So this part of the Mishnah, we'll call Roman numeral number 1, records machlokes shin chachamim and Rabbi Yehuda, how many malchus we meet out. Now we get to Roman numeral number 2, and the subject of this part of the Mishnah is what's called umdina. When you convert that noun into a verb, it becomes omdim. And what it really means, in Yiddish we say to shatz up, means we have to evaluate. We need an actual health, a medical evaluation here. We're going to bring in experts and decide whether or not this man or this woman is healthy enough to tolerate 40 malchus, or according to Chachamim, 39 malchus, without endangering the person's life. The Torah doesn't say that we put this person to death. And therefore the normal laws of pikuach nefesh to save a life kick in, and we're going to have to do an umdana. Now, it's very interesting to know that the Mishnah doesn't tell us how proximate is the umdana to the actual meeting out of the malchus. Because what could happen is the person's health could change over a period of time, even from one day to the next. So in theory, let's suggest the following, and we'll see if the Gemara bears this out. The umdana has to take place on the very same day of the malchus. Otherwise, it's not valid. And that's only one issue that comes up with regard to umdana. There are many other issues. For example, what happens if the umdana was imprecise? What happens if a situation arises in which, after giving some of the malchus, which according to the umdana he can tolerate more, all of a sudden they realize he's getting very weak? Do we stop everything at that point? Do we start reevaluating? Do a new umdana? And then there's another issue here which is going to come up, that the 39 malchus, according to Chachamim, is subdivided into three equal parts, three-thirds. And the question is, what happens if the umdana says that he can tolerate X malchus, which is somewhere in between one-third and another? So if it turns out to be an exact number that's, you know, divisible by three, that's one thing. But if it can't be divisible by three, let's say they say he can only take five malchus, so we'll probably end up giving him three malchus, because we always have to have a number that's divisible by three. And all this we'll have to clarify as we go along. So the Mishnah says, Ein omdin oso ela b'makos ha-ra'uyos lehishtalish. Lehishtalish is a verb, the noun of which is shalosh. And it means that we need a number that's divisible by three. So 3, 6, 9, etc., etc. And if there's going to be an umdana that he can only take a shlish plus, then that surplus beyond that shlish is going to be dropped. Then the Gemara is going to talk about the fact that out of these three-thirds, let's say you have 13, 13, and 13, two-thirds, which means 26 out of the 39, will be given on his back. And the last third, which is another 13, will be given on his belly. And then, of course, you have Rabbi Yehuda Shita, who says that the 40th makkah is going to be given bein haksefayim, which means on the top, in the front. Amdu lekabel arbayim, they evaluated that he could tolerate 40 malchus, the whole full gamut. Viloka miktas, and they started giving him the lashes. And then, Amdu, they saw that he was getting very weak, and they made an evaluation. She'ein yachol lekabel arboim, that there's no way that he could take the full 40. Potter. At this point, we let him off the hook. He's already suffered enough. We began the process. Now, the real question is, was the first umdana accurate? Or was there some mistake in the umdana? Meaning, what changed over here? Did the umdana change, or did his situation change? He got weaker as a result of the makas. If it's the first, meaning that the umdana was not valid, then it would seem logical that we should throw out that umdana and start from scratch. If, on the other hand, the umdana was valid, then that's exactly how many malchus he should get based on that umdana, and that umdana is now, shall we say, engraved in stone. Now we find out that he got weak. We cannot replace the first umdana with a second umdana. The halacha requires an umdana, but only one umdana. Now, if that umdana was inaccurate, that's called an umdana betos, then we could start a new umdana. We erase the first one and start from scratch. But if, on the other hand, the first umdana, bless you, was accurate, but now the situation of the nilke changed, his health deteriorated, then we cannot substitute the first umdana with the second umdana. And therefore, when the Mishnah says he's potur, basically what the Mishnah seems to be saying at this point, although we're going to see that it gets a little more complicated, is that we cannot create another Umdana. And since the first Umdana met its, you know, it terminated itself because he can no longer take more Malkus, therefore he gets off the hook. If the original Umdana was mistaken, then the law would require that we replace that Umdana with a second Umdana. All right, now we have another case in the Mishnah. Omdu lekabel shmona esrei. Right, shmona esrei, because 18 is a number that's divisible by 3. And they assume that the maximum he can take is 18. Umishaloka, he received the 18 blows. Omdu sheyochel hu lekabel arboim. They realize that they underestimated. And until now, we've talked about overshooting. And he can't take that amount, even though the Umdana had it that way. Now we're talking about underestimating. They thought he was too weak to take anything beyond 18. Now, lo and behold, they find out that he could take more. Potter means that the original Umdana is still in place, and we cannot add another Umdana to replace the first one. That's very strange, because in this case, clearly they made a mistake. Otherwise, why is it that he could take more than 18, and they said he can only take 18? So we're left with a very, very strange stira here in terms of the principle of the Mishnah. What is the operating underlying principle of the Mishnah? Is it that the Umda Vitos is not an Umdana and it'll be replaced by a second Umdana? Or is it a general rule that once he gets a certain number of Malkus, that's it? You can never give him more or less. You gave him that amount of Malkus. Could be we made a mistake in the Umdana, it's irrelevant. Once we give him Malkus, That's the story. Okay. Excuse me for just a split second. Okay, no, it's not from my wife. Okay. So I'm waiting to hear some good news. All right. The Gemara says the following. My timer. We established in the Mishnah that the maximum number of Malkus, according to Chacham, that we give is 39. Why is that so? The Pasuk says, Arboim Yakenu. So the Gemara says, Iksiv. If the Torah would have said, Arboim Bimispar. In other words, if the word Bimispar comes first, then there's something strange going on. If the word Arboim comes first, then the word Bimispar is coming to limit it, or I shouldn't say limit it, but to define it as precisely 40. Arboim Bimispar. Hava mina arboim b'minyana, that we need exactly a full 40 malchus. But hashad d'chsiv b'mispar arboim, a number that comes close to 40, is minyan shehu sochem es harboim. It comes close to 40. In other words, you need another number in order to round it off at 40. And that gives us 39. Now there's an amazing thing going on here when you think about it. If, let's say, we had a Stuki somewhere around who only believed in Torah Shebichsav, and the Torah says, Arboim Yakenu, he wouldn't be too excited about giving 39. But we believe in Torah Shebal Peh. And Chazal have a way of interpreting Torah Shebichsav and altering what we would have considered the straightforward pshat of the Torah Shebichsav. And the Gemara really is astonished by this. Omar Rava. Rava says, Kama tipshoi shar inshi, and the Mefarshim say that the word shar inshi means most people are tipshoim. That's a very heavy accusation. They're idiots. Why are they idiots? The kaime makame sefer Torah. When they see a sefer Torah going by, they stand up. Velo kaime makame gavarava. They won't stand when a great man, a great scholar goes by. Now, what we have to analyze here is what does the phrase Gavra Rabba mean? You know, there are a lot of different levels of chachma and wisdom and scholarship. Usually the word Gavra Rabba is reserved for the highest level of a Talmud Chacham. You know, not just your average Talmud Chacham. You know, Berzon wouldn't rate over here. You know, you need a Gewaltige Talmud Chacham. You know, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, he's a Gavra Rabba. You follow my point? But in any event, these people who make up the majority of the population are accused by Rava as not standing up for a great scholar. They're willing to stand with a great deal of zeal for a Sefer Torah. He says this is stupidity. Why? De'ilu b'Sefer Torah k'siv, the Torah opens up and says, Arboim, v'yosu rabbonim botzru chado, and the Chachom come along and they subtract one. So who's greater, the Sefer Torah itself, in Torah Shel Chasav, or Chazal interpreting the Torah Shel Chasav? So the problem that I want to raise with you before we go on in this sugya is a Gemara in Kiddushin. The Gemara in Kiddushin wants to know where's the source in Halacha for the obligation to stand up for a Sefer Torah. And the Gemara Lamed Gimel Amud Beis in Kiddushin establishes the following Kal Vachomer. Mipnei Lomdeha, someone who studies Torah, is omdib for now. You have to stand in front of such a person. And that's based on the passing of Adar to Pnei Zokin, and Zokin is interpreted as Misha Kana Chacham. So you have to stand in front of a Talmud Chacham, who acquired his wisdom. Is Mipnei HaTorah Atzmo Lo Kolshkein? How much more so do I have to stand in front of the Torah itself? But Rabosai, what's the logic that underlies this Kal Vachomer? Which is greater, the Talmud Chacham or the Sefer Torah? Which is the kal? Every kal v'chomer has a kal and a chomer.
The kal is the
Talmud Chacham. So the Sefer Torah is that much greater, and yet Rava in our sugya is operating with the premise that the Talmud Chacham is greater than the Sefer Torah. So all the Mefarshim, and there's a long list here, try to figure out how to reconcile the Gemara in Kiddushin that assumes that a Talmud Chacham is on a lower level, that's the Kal, Sefer Torah on the higher level, and our Gemara of Rava here in Makkos that assumes that Talmud Chacham is on a greater level. So I do want to...
Consensus on which way do they consensus? Is it like, which one is the Kal, which one is the Chomer, or are they each are they different? Like,
you mean, is there anyone who disagrees with the Kal V'chomer? Is that what you're asking?
There's a steer. And the Mefarsh will be asked one way or the other way, or did they each
every Mefarsh goes in a different direction to try to reconcile this. Yeah, you want to pull the table out? Okay. The only drawback of that couch is that it's too comfortable. It's all high. The challenge is not getting into the couch, it's getting out of the couch.
Can I ask, please, the statement in Kiddushin, whose name is that in? Who says that?
I don't have the Gemara in front of me right now, but I don't think there's any debate about it. You know, the Gemara, Chad V'Cholok, you know, without any question, determines that this Kal V'Chomer is the basis for the mitzvah of standing for a Talmud Chacham, for a Sefer Torah. This Kal V'Chomer. So I'm not going to go through all the Mefarshim with you, but just in passing, I wanted to touch on two reconciliations. The first one is from the Aruch Laner. And the Aruch Laner says the following, that the Gemara in Kiddushin, when it compares a Talmud Chacham to a Sefer Torah, is talking about a Zaken Shekana Torah Shebichsav. His expertise is Torah Shavachsav. Our sugya is talking about a Gavra Rabba who has mastered not just Torah Shavachsav, but also Torah Shavachsav. So let's say you and I would know someone who came in third in the International Bible Quiz, okay? So we would be required to stand up for such a person because they acquired expertise in Torah Shavachsav. But they don't have the same status as a Gavra Rabba who has mastered Torah Shebaal Peh. Sefer Torah fits right in the middle between these two polar extremes, meaning in the gradations it goes like this. The lowest level is the Talmud Chacham who knows Torah Shebichsav. The next level up is the Sefer Torah. And the third level, the highest level, is a Gavra Rabba who is capable of answering questions throughout Torah Shebaal Peh. So therefore there's no stira, says the Aruch HaShulchan. Our Gemara is addressing the case of a Gavra Rabba who's on the highest level, he knows Torah Shebaal Peh. He's greater than a Sefer Torah. So how could it be that you idiots will stand for the Sefer Torah, but you won't stand for a Gavra Rabba? The Gavra Rabba is so great that he can reinterpret the Torah Shebichsav. The Gemara Kiddushin, on the other hand, is talking about the low-level Talmud Chacham, who may be a great scholar in the in the 24 books of the Holy Writ, you know, knows all Chof Dalet Kisvei HaKodesh, but he doesn't have Torah Shebaal Peh. He's inferior to a Sefer Torah. The Sefer Torah is the source of Torah Shebichsav. So if the Torah requires me to stand on in front of a Talmud Chacham whose expertise is Torah Shebichsav, how much more so for the Torah Shebichsav itself, which is the origin and the source. And then I want to share with you the Pnei Yehoshua. The Pnei Yehoshua is very similar in his general methodology, but he says something very interesting. He says that a Gavra Rabba is not just your Talmud Chacham who knows Torah Shebichsav as mastered Torah Shebaal Peh. Oh, no, no, no. He's someone who's roy to sit on the Sanhedrin. He's what you call a muflag b'chachma. He's an Adam Gadol haroy leshev b'sanhedrin, and therefore he is capable of reinterpreting the Torah. The Torah says arboim yakena, and he's going to tell us batzer chada to subtract one. So therefore the Gemara in Kiddushin might be talking, according to Pnei Yehoshua, even about a Talmud Chacham who's a first-class Talmud Chacham. He's not just he not only won the Bible quiz, but he also knows 500 Blatin Shas. Now that was in the Mir Yeshiva back in Europe. You were tested on 500 Blat. And if you succeeded, you were in a separate category. In Sanz, I don't know if you've heard of Kloisenberg, they have what's called the Mifal HaShas. And you can do different levels, different paces, but the ultimate is, you know, when you know all of Shas. That person is the person who's the subject of the Sugya Kiddushin, says the Pnei Yehoshua. But there's one in a generation who's called a Gavra. He is so great that he can sit on the Sanhedrin Agdola, he can sit on the body, the greatest body of law in Israel, 71 elders, and he is able to reinterpret the Torah Shebichsav. We thought it meant Arboim, and he says, no, it's only 39. Alright, let's go on. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Arboim Shlemos. Rabbi Yehuda says he gave him 40 Malkus. Omer Rabbi Yitzchak, my time with Rabbi Yehuda. Why does Rabbi Yehuda have this 40th Mako, which he gives on the front of the body, towards the top? The Pasuk says in Zechariah Novi, and I'm going to read the whole Pasuk for you. It says, V'omar Elov, Ma Hamakos Ha'ele Ben Yodecha. It seems that the Maka is given between the hands. Now this doesn't make any sense, because we know the word Maka refers to one of two possibilities. Either it means on the back, or it means on the abdomen in the front. But nowhere do we see Bein Yadav. Yadav means arms here, not hands, but arms, between his arms. And then the end of that pasuk says, V'omar asher hu kesi beis mahavi. And beis mahavi means that sometimes you give makis out of a sense of love. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, it's usually when you think of hitting someone, it's anything but love. But Hashem, in the words of the Navi, is going to mete out punishment to the Jewish people, Beis Mahavi, because of his love for the Jewish people. This is the way that he wants to refine the people of Israel and elevate them. But in any event, what do we see clearly here? If the word Maka in this Pasuk in Zechariah is referring to a Maka given by Bezdin, although again, that's not Pshuto Shel Mikra. Pshuto Shel Mikra is talking about a divinely meted out punishment. Then Bezdin is giving a Maka Bein Haktefayim, between the Adayim, which means the shoulder area, between the two arms. But why? I mean, we only know Maka is on the back and on the abdomen. Says Rabbi Yehuda, this Pasuk is referring to the 40th Malka. The 40th Maka is given Bein Haktefayim, between the shoulders. What did you say, Aaron? No, it's a little bit below the neck. The neck is considered a little bit too dangerous. V'rabbanon, what do they do with this pasuk? They only have 39 malchus. Hahu, that pasuk is referring to tinoko shel beis ravon hu d'chsiv. And the truth is that if we're talking about tinoko shel beis ravon, which is otherwise known as tashbar, that's just Russian tavis, then you have to be very gentle. And the most gentle area to give a person a maka is somewhere around the hands. I remember my father, Shalom, I never really got hit by him. One Pesach night, I don't know what I did, he got angry at me. But my father used to wind up, and it was a scare, and then he would hit me on the hand. That was the big deal. So that's what we're saying about Tinoko Shel Beis Rabban. And who remembers the sugi that we did back on Daf Ches, I think it was, about how to train a child, and sometimes out of love, you hit the child.
Also teach it to student.
And also teach it to student. And the Rambam Paskins in Hilchos Talmud Torah, that in Tashvar, in Tinoko Shel Beis Rabban, the Rebbe is allowed to take the strap and hit the child. My friend Rabbi Shurin tells me about his grandfather, Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, that his Cheder Rebbe, when he was a child, was so smart. What he did was he had the strap up on the wall, and if a child misbehaved, he would point to the wall. But Rav Yaakov said he was in the class for years, and he never ever saw him take down the strap from the wall. In any event, this begins to shed a light on the word Beis Mahavai that we saw in Zechariah. Because again, if we're talking about a parent who's hitting a child out of love, or a Rebbe who's hitting a child out of love, then we understand very well that the Pasuk calls this Beis Mahavai. That's going to the Chacham. But if we turn the clock back to Rabbi Yehuda, and we're talking about giving Malkus to someone who's in violation of a law, then you begin to wonder why that's called Beis Mahavai. Hmm. So the Mefarshim say that this last makah is meant to send a message to the loke, the person who's getting malchus, that this is happening out of love. Hashem loves you, and ultimately you became a rasha, but ultimately we want you to become a tzaddik. We want you to understand that this is part of the process of tshuva, and therefore, Kedei Lasos Ov Esal Kadosh Baruch Hu, if you accept these malchus and you allow them to refine your personality, your soul, you will become Ohuv Lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You become beloved to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Okay. Now we get back to the sugya of Umdina, which was Roman numeral number 2 in our Mishnah. And first of all, the Mishnah establishes that the Umdina has to set up numbers that are divisible by 3. Ein omdim el makas haruuyos, and the Mishnah says lehishtalish. They can be divided by 3. So 39 can be divided by 3. 13 times 3 is 39. And the number 9 can be divided by 3, etc. It says always be multiples of 3.
Do we learn why?
Oh, so let's see the sugya and we'll see if it makes sense to us. So let's say, for example, we have, just one second, I just want to go back for 1 minute. I think I forgot to say one thing. Just one second. Right. Oh, so just in this is what I wanted to say before, and this I think would at least partially answer your question. I'm not sure if it'll totally answer your question. And that is the following. Some of the malchus have to be given on the back. That's called me'achorov. And some have to be given milafanov, which is in the stomach area. And the Gemara is going to say that because the Torah requires 39 malchus, how do we divide up the malchus me'achorov and milafanov? And the answer is that we give 2 shlish me'achorov and 1 shlish milafanov. Now, I'm going to work with a premise, which I have to prove not only to you, but to myself. So it's still unproven. That the Malkus Me'achorov are more humiliating. Because we're going to see that what happens is he has to lean over a pole and hold on to the pole, and then they take his top off. It's quite humiliating, because the Torah says, V'nikla chicha be'necha. And I think it's more humiliating when he's hit from the back and he bends over. But be that as it may, the law is that he gets 2/3 from the back and 1/3 from the front. And therefore, we can only fulfill that halach, that requirement, if we have a number which is divisible by 3. Whatever that number is, you can break it down into 2/3 and 1/3. In any event, what happens when we do this umdana and we start giving him malchus? And lo and behold, we find that the Umdana was wrong. Either it was over-evaluated or under-evaluated, meaning his health is not, he's not capable of tolerating so many malchus, or on the contrary, he could have taken more malchus. So the Mishnah tells us, if you recall, let's go back to look at the Lashon on Mishnah. The Mishnah says, and this you'll see on the second line from the top, now on the top line on Chav Beis Amud Beis, Amdu She'ein Yochel Lekabel Arba'im Patur. Correct? Just one second. I'm sorry. We have to go back actually to Chav Beis Amud Aleph. It says, Amdu Lekabel Arba'im Vilaka, that's the correct text, Vilaka Miktas. So before, what happened in the description of the Mishnah, what happened before they realized that the Umdana was off base? It was incorrect. Hello, anybody home?
What that he didn't like.
What's Velaka mean?
They're in the middle of...
Correct, that he already got some of the malchus, right? Velaka miktas. So the Gemara is now medayik. Laka in. Lo laka, lo. If he didn't, if the process of malchus had not begun and he hadn't received any malchus whatsoever, then we throw out the first umdana and we replace it with the second umdana. Only when the first umdana was actually, we'll call it engraved in stone, it was mamish chal befoal, by the fact that he got some number of malchus, a partial number, albeit, but some malchus, then that umdana becomes, shall we say, fixed in stone. It has a chazaka, and you can't remove it and replace it with a different umdana. That's why he's potter. For a minu, but we have a brisa that seems to say the exact opposite. And what does the brisa tell us? Amdu, they decided how many malchus he could tolerate. Lekabel arba'im, and he could take the full gamut. V'chazru v'amru, and then they decided, wait a minute, we made a mistake, a miscalculation. Eino yochel lekabel arba'im. We overestimated. Is potter. It doesn't seem like the Brisa added that stipulation that they already started meeting out the malchus. This means the umdan itself is engraved in stone, even if it was never implemented. He didn't get even one single malka, and yet he's potter. That's the impression you get. And then now let's look at the next part of the Brisa. The Brisa says, Omdu lekabel shmonasre, right, which is the number divisible by three. Chazru v'omdu sheyochel lekabel arba'im. They underestimated. And the Mishnah says potter. Now it could be that in this case of the Mishnah, of the Brisa, the Sefer, he got already some of the malchus. I don't know. It's hard to say.
Why is it that he has to know how many he's going to be getting? Why can't they just start and then see how much he can take?
So we're going to derive from Psukim that in order to give malchus, prior to the malchus, there must be an umdana. The umdana itself will determine how many malchus he has, and you cannot start the process without the umdana. Mm-hmm. In fact, we're going to talk later on about a shliach bezdin who killed the person, and we're going to see whether or not the shliach bezdin is considered karav lemezid. But does he go into golus? Does he not go into golus? It all depends upon the extent of his guilt. And if there was no umdana, then we consider him very, very guilty of causing the death of this victim. In any event, one thing is clear from the Brisa, that even though there were no malchus that were meted out from the first umdana, nevertheless, he's potter. Rav Sheshes lo kasha. Rav Sheshes wants to differentiate between our Mishnah and the Brisa. Ha diamdu hu li yome, ha diamdu le machar u li yoma achrona. Ochara. Okay, so first let's try to translate the words of Rav Sheshes, and then we'll try to understand what he's saying. This, for all the sugyas that I prepared for tonight, this one line is the most difficult one, and I'm hoping that I'll survive it. You know, after this it gets a little bit easier, but this is the tough one. Okay, so first of all, ha diamduhu liyome. In other words, on the very same day, they made two umdanas. let's say in the morning they made an umdana, they could take X amount, and then they did a second umdana on the very same day. In such a case, we really believe that nothing changed in terms of your victim. Why would a few hours go by and all of a sudden his health deteriorated or improved? And therefore we must have to assume that the original umdana was betos. It was totally off base, it was mistaken, and therefore it's not called an umdana at all. In other words, what we call a chalashem umdana, it doesn't have the halachic status of an umdana. And if that be the case, if nothing happened as a result of this umdana, meaning we didn't get a chance to actually implement the umdana, and he didn't get even one single malka, then we start from scratch. The original umdana is gone. In other words, an umdana can freeze the situation, as we called it a chazaka before, such that you cannot replace that umdana, his potter, in one of two ways. Either the umdana gains that status because it was accurate, or B, even if it was inaccurate, but they actually implemented that umdana. In this case, we're in Yomei, in the same day, they replaced the first umdana with a second, we're lacking both conditions. Right? He didn't get one single malka in this case, because time didn't allow it. And number two, the first umdana clearly was a mistaken umdana. And if that be the case, the first umdana has no chazaka whatsoever, neither because of its accuracy, or to be more precise, its inaccuracy, and neither because of the actual malkas that he got.
Is anyone responsible for the mistaken umdana? Like, let's say that the guy can only take five, and the guy's just given 40, and he kills him.
Right. You have to know who might have to share the blame for that. But let's just go through case by case. So again, case number one is they did an umdana in the morning. And in the second one, they replaced that umdana with a second umdana. Between the two umdanas, he never got a single lash. In such a case, we're going to start from scratch as if nothing happened. And the second umdana will replace the first umdana. That's the discussion in the Braisa. What's the discussion in the Mishnah? The Mishnah, just one second.
You have that backwards.
Yeah, I got it backwards. Right. Just one second. We'll give him a brand new umdana. Right, we'll give him a brand new umdana. So here the Mishnah is correct, because the Mishnah says locker. Right, the Mishnah says that when is he potter? He's only potter if he's locker. You remember the Mishnah? Okay. Now, what's the case of the Braisa? The case of the Braisa is Ha di amdu lemachar uliyoma achara. In other words, they made an umdana today for tomorrow. Okay? And then, when they get to tomorrow, they realize that there was a mistake. In such a case, since the first umdana was accurate for its time, therefore, it's frozen, engraved in stone, frozen in its place, it's valid. So let me read to you what he says over here. He says, Noktim sheha ha'umdana harishon eina betos, ela ka'es nishtana kocho. What changed over here? Why is the second umdana contradicting the first? The answer is because a day went by. And within that period of a day, we have reason to believe that he, the victim, changed his health situation. Mm-hmm. And therefore, if in the original umdana, they evaluated that he could take 40 malkas, and now that umdana is still proven to be solid, you know, we can't undermine that umdana. In its time, it was a correct, accurate umdana. It was absolutely appropriate for his health situation. Therefore, when we destroy the first umdana and replace it with the second, he's potter. Why? Because you cannot have a second umdana on top of the first umdana. Now, in the case in the Braisa, in the Sefer of the Braisa, where they evaluated that he could take 18 malkas, and they underestimated, and now they find out that he could take 14, in that case, Eino loka elikafi ha'omed arishon kevet shaya omed gomor. Once again, even though today he seems to be jolly and healthy, you know, maybe he pumped iron and now he can take more than 18 malkas, but nevertheless, yesterday he could take 18 and that was an accurate umdana. So once he got the first umdana And the first thing they're registered, the maximum number of malchus we can give them is 18, even though now we can shatz them up for more than 18. Okay? All right, now I think it gets a little bit easy. All right. The Mishnah says, Avar Avera Sheyesh Ba Shnei Lavim, if he now is chayav for two different lavim, right? He's a double Rasha. For example, let's say he was choresh with kelayim. So he violates the iser of charisha b'kelayim, and he violates the iser zriya, let's say, of kelayim. So now he has two violations. Is each lav independent in generating its own umdana, or can we combine the two because he violated both lavim with one avera, with one maisa? So the Mishnah says the following, that really depends. Amduhu omed echad. If they integrated both lavim into one umdana, and they decided that he could take more than just the 39 malchus, he could tolerate more loke, then he will get malchus. And if, let's say, they said he could take 41 malchus, well, 42 malchus, right? So then, after the 42nd malka, he no longer is chayav malchus. It's not like we can say, wait a minute, you didn't finish up the 39 malchus for the second lav, because what they did was they swallowed up, they integrated the umdana of the second lav with the first lav, and they made a general overall umdana for both lavim. Then he already got malchus for the second lav based on that umdana, and he can never get any more malchus for that second lav. But in lav, but let's say they determined that, you know what, the maximum number of malchus he can get is 39. Then automatically the halacha establishes that umdana relates to the first avera, the first lav, and not to the second. And therefore they can make a new umdana whenever the time comes, you know, when he restores his health. Loka umisrapi v'chozer v'loka. Let him get the 39 malchus, then restore his health. We'll wait a week, we'll wait a month, and then we'll give him another set of malchus. The Gemara says the following.
We then give him another 7, or then let's say give him another...
Give him another 39. 39. Yeah, give him a full 39, if he can take it. So the Gemara right away says, wait a minute, you're telling me that you can make an umdur for two different lavim? For Asanya, didn't we learn in a brisa, ein omdim omer echad l'shnei lavim? Every lav requires its own chiyuv malchus, and therefore its own independent umdana. Om Rav Sheshes lo kasha... Rav Sheshes seems to be the high-profile guy tonight, right? He says the following. The brisa that says, Ein omdim omer echad l'shnei lavim, diomdu li'arboim v'chada. They said that he could take 41 malchus. Okay. Now let's see. 41 malchus means...
39 plus 2.
39 plus 2, correct? So then, if we calculate the malchus for the second lav, there are only two malchus for the second lav. And that's not a number divisible by 3. So since Kevin Sharoi Lilkos Halav Echad, therefore, he cannot receive malchus for the second lav more than the Shtei Malchus. And two malchus is not called a malchus because it's not divisible by 3. So therefore, we're going to only give malchus for one lav. So when the Brisa says ein omdim omer echad l'shnei lavim, it's because they didn't give him any malchus for the second lav, because 41 really means 39. Oh, but our Mishnah is talking about a case the amduli arboim vitarte malchus 43, and since 43 has 39 plus 3 and an extra one, but at least there are 3 malchus that we could give him, which is the minimum amount of malchus for the second lav. So you already had an umdana for the second lav. If he had an umdana for the second lav, we can't add a second umdana for the second lav when he becomes healthy, and therefore he gets away with 42 malchus. Okay. Ketzad Malkinos. Okay, so this is the gory part of Masechta Makos. So if you're squeamish, you know, you might want to take a rest on the couch. Okay. Ketzad Malkinos. So what do we do? So the Shliach Bezdin has to tie this guy down. Kofes Shtei Yodov Al Ha'amud. You know, there's a pole, and they tie down his two hands to the pole. Helich v'helich on both sides, meaning make sure that it's very, very tight, and it really wraps around both sides of this pole. And then the Chazan HaKnesses, who is the Shliach Beis Din to give out Malkus, Ochez b'begadov, he holds on to his garment on top, which is where the Beis HaTzavah is. What's that called in English? The hole for the head. I don't know what. There should be a word for it. In Mexico, I think there's a word for it. Okay, anyway. And what do? And they pull this beged over his head to strip his top. Im nikru nikru, im nifrimu nifrimu. The Shliach Beis Din doesn't have to worry about the beged. Now, I think the significance here is that Chazal say that I call my begadim my kavod. You know, the honor of a person is in the way he dresses. Here, we're not interested in his honor. We just rip off the top of his clothes. We're going to see what happens in a tznius issue for women, but that's a different sugya. And therefore, whatever happens to the beggar, that's none of your no concern to the Shliach Beis Din. Achu megalas libo, so that his chest is exposed. And the story gets even more, shall I say, a little bit more shocking. Even Nesuna Me'achorov, they actually have a stone that's behind the victim. So the victim is looking front, and there's an Even behind him. And the Chazan HaKnesses Omidov, he climbs up onto the stone. Ritzua Biyadu, he's holding onto the strap. We're going to soon see that this strap is made from a shar. Okay, because the shar represents Yodah Shar Kodnei. This guy didn't even recognize his maker. He rebelled against his maker. So we're going to use the shar that knows its maker, and we're going to shal egel. Okay, we have to see egel is usually a young shar. Why the Mishnah uses the word egel? Kfula echad l'shnayim. So you have this long strip that is bent over, so it becomes like two. Ushnayim li'arba. And then we take the double one and we double that. So we basically have a very small ritsua. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, that this is going to reduce the pain level of the nilke. In any event, shtei ritsuos shel chamar olos v'yordos ba. Yoda tefach v'rochva tefach v'rosha magas al gabi kreso. So now the Mishnah delineates the exact size of these ritsuos. Now, it's not clear that the girsa here is chamar, because as we said before, the ritsu is made of an egel. An egel comes from a shar, and that's not a chamar. So we probably want to remove the word chamar here from this Mishnah. But in any event, at the time of the Malkus, what we're going to do is we're going to have these two ritsuos and somehow combine them together. I guess we sew them together, if that's okay. Do you have, Jonathan, an English translation with you? How does he translate Olos V'Yordos Ba? Does he give you any insight?
Run up and down within it.
Say it again?
Intertwine.
Two straps of donkey hide run up and down within it. The note says...
Oh, good, there's a note.
There were holes in the calfskin straps through which the donkey hide thongs were drawn through the calfskin in a stitch-like manner. Thus, when viewed from the side, the donkey hide appeared to go up and down.
Ah, okay. Fine. Nice. So how long and how wide is this strap? It's very small. It's a tefach. You know, tefach is probably like the size of a hand. Maybe 6 inches. And the head of the ritsua, after you have the yad, you know, the yad is the stick, the end of the stick is the ritsua, is the strap, so it's long enough to reach kreso,
to reach his abdomen, because that's where the third of the malchus is given. Makos oshlish milafanov, one third will go to his abdomen. Ushte yodos, which means two thirds, milachorov, which means on his back. V'eno makos so lo omed v'lo yoshev. In other words, what's the position of the nilke, of the victim? He's not standing, he's not sitting. Ela muta. He's bent over onto this pole that we spoke about before. Shenemar, vihipilo hashofet, and then the pasuk says vihiko lefanov. So vihipilo means that at the moment of the halka, the victim has to be bent over. Vahamake, maka biyado achas bechol kocho. Again, if you would allow him to use two hands, that would probably double the force. So the Torah wants to be a little bit more compassionate. And even though he's allowed to use his full force, but he's only with one hand. And then as he's divvying out these malkas, Hakore, there's someone who's reading psukim in the Torah. What psukim is he reading? Kore. Now all these psukim are from Sefer Dvarim. And we'll go through the psukim, except for the last pasuk is from Tilim. And the psukim are the following. It says, Im lo tishmar lasos, and then it says in the end of the pasuk, it's called Divrei HaTorah Zos, Haksum b'sefer hazeh liyiras Hashem, anichpa v'anor hazeh ke'eis Hashem olkecha. So the whole subject of this pasuk is lo tishmar, you didn't observe and uphold the will of God as it's embodied in the Torah. And then the very next pasuk says, v'hifla Hashem es makoscha, this is all about giving out malchus. Okay, now if he read the entire pasuk and he still didn't get to the 39th malka, then chose l'tchilas hamikra, he repeats the pasuk a second time. In other words, he wasn't able to synchronize the pasuk with the 39 malchus. So the process of malchus is still going on. He goes back to the beginning of the pasuk. Then, after he's read that pasuk a second time, or maybe it means the second of the two psukim, because as we said before, there are two psukim here, vehifla. Then he reads another pasuk, and this pasuk is in the end of Dvarim, one chapter later. Ushmartem es divrei abris hazos. Now it's interesting. This second pasuk, which is really the third pasuk, but is much more optimistic. It ends on a high note. Because whereas the previous pasuk spoke about violating the Torah, right? Because the Torah, it says, "Im lo tishmar lasos." Here it says "Ushmartem," which is a divine prophecy that the Jewish people will observe the Torah. So we're ending on a good note. V'chosem, and again, I don't know what v'chosem means. See, if it means that the second and the third pasuk, since they each have 13 words, so each word corresponds to one of the malchus, then the next pasuk we're about to read, Vehu Rachum, also has 13 words, and that's going to be the pasuk that coincides with the third set, the one milafanov of malchus. Vechosim Vehu Rachum Yechaper Ovon, and the pasuk says Lo Yashas, but should probably know. Vechosim L'Tchilas HaMikra, again, if there's still malchus being divvied out, he goes back to the beginning of the pasuk. Now, the Aruch Laner has a chiddush here. He claims that the first pasuk, which is Im lo tishmar lasos, is not given simultaneously with the malchus. That first pasuk is an introduction. Because again, since we want to divide up the malchus into three sets of 13, there should be only three psukim. So the first of the three psukim, says the Aruch Laner, is Vehifla Hashem es makoscha.
Now, 13 words.
Yeah. I don't know, I didn't count it out. Let's see if it's 13. Hifla Shem S. Makos.
Yeah, our art scroll has it with numbers next to it. It's all 13.
Yeah, he has it?
Look at it.
Okay. Oh, he actually shows it to you in a chart. V'yemeis tachas yodo. What happens if the man Nebuch dies? Is pot. The one who killed him, the Chazan HaKnesses, does not have to go into Golos. And you may recall, we had a sugi about this back on Daf Ches, that that since it's not Dumya D'Yar, Yar is Rishus, here he was involved in a mitzvah, and therefore, if he killed the Vishogeg, he doesn't go into Golos. However, that's only because he gave 39 Malkus. But Hosiflo, if he mistakenly gave him a 40th lash, Od Ritzua Achas, who mess, and he died, Hareze Gola Al Yada, he's Mamish Rotzeh B'Shogeg. My question only is why he's considered Shogeg over here. He realizes that an extra Malka could kill the guy. But the answer is that he thinks that he's supposed to be giving one more Malka, which in fact is the Shita Rabbi Yehud, we don't pass like Rabbi Yehud. So therefore he's considered a Rotzeh B'Shogeg. Are there any circumstances, any situations in which we don't have to give out the Malkas, even though the Umdana was perfect? Niskalkil, Bain Berei, Bain Bemayim. If the man, the victim, was so overwhelmed by this anxious, by the anxiety and the tension and the humiliation that he couldn't control his bodily functions, Bain Berei, Bain Bemayim, even if he starts pishing, if you pardon the expression, is part of it. That's it. The Pasuk says, Vinikla, and we achieve Vinikla. Because there's no separate Gzeres HaKosev of 39 Malkus. The 39 Malkus is just Shi'urim in Vinikla. If he achieves this Vinikla, this embarrassment, this humiliation, before the 39th, that's enough. Rabbi Yehuda differentiates between males and females. He says, Ha'ish is Berei. If the man starts urinating, that's not enough of humiliation. It's only if he defecates. But Ha'isha is B'mayim, even if she starts urinating, that's enough of a V'nikla. That's humiliating. A woman's humiliation is always easier, so to speak, than a man's. Let's read the Gemara now. On Daf Chav Gimel Omer Alf. The Gemara wants to know my time. Now, it's not clear what this my timer is going on. Is it a reference to the fact that he has to have his hands tied down to this pole? Is it the fact that we rip his clothes and we don't care about that? It's not. That's not clear. Mishum, but the answer is v'nikla. The Torah says v'nikla chicha b'leinecha, which means bizui, which means we humiliate him. And part of the process of humiliating him is having him bent over with his hands tied down to the pole and having his clothes ripped off him. The Gemara says now, Om Rav Sheshes Mishum Rav Lozar Ben Azariah Minayin L'Ritzua Shehishal Egel. Why is it that this strap that he hits him with has to be taken from a young ox, which is called an Egel, a calf? T'chsiv, the Torah says, and here I'll read the whole pasuk to you, we've seen this pasuk many times, V'hoya im bin hakos ha-rosh v'pilo ha-shov v'kol l'fonav arboim yakena. We give him 40 lashes. U'samach, then immediately afterwards, the next pasuk says, lo sachsam shar b'dish. And that's the prohibition against muzzling a shar as it's threshing in the field. And the emphasis here is on the word shar. The shar is connected to the arboim yakena, and you have to take the hide, the skin of the shor, and make this ritzua out of the shor. Why is the Mishnah say egel? What's that all about? The Aruch Laner, says that this is based on a sugi bava kama, that a shor ben yomo kori shor, that as soon as the shor is born, it's only an egel, but it's called a shor in the Torah's language. Vehadifus shal egel mishum shu rach. And if I understand correctly, what he's saying is that out of compassion, we want to hit him with a very soft strap, and that's the strap of a young shor, of an eagle. Now the Gemara mentions things agav urcha, which really have nothing to do with our sugya. Another statement of Rav Sheshes in the name of Rav Blaz ben Azar, minayin liyavama shenafla lifnei muka shkin. In other words, the surviving brother, right, because she lost her husband, he died without children, the surviving brother, Yavam, is a mukashkin. Mukashkin means he's probably sort of like a leper. His whole body is full of boils. And it's very difficult to expect a woman to be married to such a man. So even though technically she falls for Yibum, and it's really his decision, according to the Torah law, whether or not he will implement that chiyuv of yibum. But nevertheless, the Rabbanan decided that they're going to force this mukashchin to do what's called chalitza and free her from this marriage. She'ein chosmen. So we're not going to shut down her mouth, you know, and gag her when she claims, I don't want to be married to this guy. But rather, we're going to force him to give chalitza. Tichsiv, lo sachsam shor b'disha. Now, symbolically, she's like this shor. And if you shut her up, it's like you muzzle the shor. She really is yelling and screaming, I don't want to be married to this guy. V'samachlein, immediately the next pasuk says, ki yesh ru'ach m'yachtov. One of the two brothers died, and he leaves his wife. As an almana, he didn't leave any children behind, and his brother comes to be miyapim. So that pasuk comes immediately following lo sachsam shor b'disha. And in Tarshav al Peh, the smichus is teaching us that she should not be muzzled. She has a right to claim, I don't want to be married to this guy, he's a mukashkin. The achronim here go to town. Does this apply to other cases? Let's say she doesn't like the nose that he has, she doesn't like his other features, you know, or is it only a mukashkin? When is she justified in saying that I'm not willing to be married to this yavam? Another statement of Rav Shesh is in the name of Rav Elazar, and there's going to be a gigantic machlokas how to interpret this statement, called Navaza es ha-moadim, ki'ilu oved avodah zarah. Very harsh words about someone who is laid back about the moadim, about observing the festivals. He's equated to an idol worshiper. Tichsiv, the pasuk says in Kitisa, it says Elohei masechel osasa lecha. V'samachlein, immediately afterwards it says eschag ha-matzos tishmar shivas yom tokal matzos. So we're going to darshan the eschag ha-matzos tishmar together with the pasuk that came before it, which is Elohei masechel osasu lecha. I'm going to say that someone who violates the Isur Malacha on the Moed is like someone who violated Elohei masechel osasu lecha, which means that he violated Avodah Zarah.
He's not talking about Cholam Moed, perhaps?
Oh. So here we have a gigantic machlokas, Daniel. The Rivan here and the Rashbam and Psochim all agree that we're talking about someone who violates Cholam Moed. But Tosus is of the opinion that Cholomoid is only Durabonah. Mm-hmm. How can it be that the Torah is equating a violation of Malacha on Cholomoid, which is only Durabonah, with Oved Avodah Zarah? The Torah doesn't recognize this Isser at all. And therefore, Tosus substitutes Yantif Atzma. We're talking about someone who violates Yantif. Now, Rashi is of the opinion that the Isser Malacha and Cholomoid is Doraisa. And therefore, we could say that the violation of Malach on Cholam Moed is as serious and as severe as violating Malach on Yontif itself. They're both Isuri Doraisa. That itself is complicated because the Isur, even if I grant you an Isur Doraisa Cholam Moed, is not based on a lav in the Torah, but based on the Pasuk Mikrai Kodesh, that you have to give Kedusha and observe the sanctity of Cholam Moed.
Can we describe the smichut as some kind of asmachta of so it's the fact that they're put together is not to
is meant
not, it's not teaching us in a chi of the writer or something.
Well, we don't know if this pasuk here is referring to Yontif itself or to Cholam.
Mm. Even if Cholam is to Rabbanan, it will still work as a type of asmachta.
Well, So if the Torah itself is talking about violating an Isur, it's hard to say that the Torah is talking about violating an Isur Drabon.
Well, the semen is not anyone who doesn't lo shamar to Moadim. It says in the like the negative who degrade the festival. In other words, it's not just that he didn't do anything; he did something that was.
But what's the worst? What's the worst scenario that you could do? On
he doesn't work the rest of the year, but on Cholam Moed he works.
Maybe. But working on Cholam Moed itself is only Osed Rabbanan. The Torah allows you to work on Cholam Moed, according to that sheet.
But even if you say there's no Isser Malacha,
right,
it's still an act of degrading.
Okay, I don't know. Maybe philosophically you could say something, but I'll be Alacha.
Well, it's the Maisa. It's philosophical.
Okay, maybe. Maybe you could say it's just...
Like you wouldn't say based on this la'alacha that chalamo is yarg va'yavar because it's a samoch to an Israel of Zara, and therefore it's like... You wouldn't say that.
But you might say that he's called an Ovid Avodah Zara, which means he's excluding himself from the community. He might not be able, if he, you know, deliberately and flagrantly violates the Eastern Malach, let's assume Malach is Doraisa for the time being on Chol HaMoed, then he might be considered like a Mumar L'Chol Shabbos. Well, we know that if he does it before Hesiv, if he does it publicly, then, you know, you cannot accept him into Klal Yisrael. He's not part of the minyan. You can't trust him in kashrus. You don't rely on his edus. You exclude him from writing a get or writing tefillin, etc. All the dinim that apply to a mumar. I don't know. See, I would have said something slightly different, but this doesn't jive with the Tosus. I would have said that even if I grant you that the Yisrael Malacha on Chol HaMoed is only to Rabbanon, but nevertheless, there is a mitzvah d'oraisa of Mikroi Kodesh. So the Torah's Isser Malacha, it could be that it's Rabbanan, but to be Mekayim the Moed as a Mikroi Kodesh, that he hasn't done, he because he's doing Malacha like an ordinary day. And that might be d'oraisa. Okay, now we have one more statement in this string, as we call it, this tradition of Rav Sheshes in the name of Rav Lozman Azariah, called a Mesaper Loshen Hora. V'chala makabel lashin hara, v'chala meir edus sheker, is roi lashlicho leklovin. Meaning when he dies, he doesn't deserve burial. Just like a trefa, you know, we take an animal that's a trefa, the Torah says, throw it to the dogs. This man deserves to be thrown to the dogs. Why? Because he violated one of the following three isurim. Dechsiv, the Torah says, with regard to trefa, which is a dead animal, like kelev tashlichun oso, dead, I mean it without shechita, right? Throw it to the dogs. Usamachan, immediately afterwards, the pasuk says, lo tisa shema shav, and then it says, al teshes yodcha im rosh alios eid chamas. So what's lo tisa shema shav? That's referring to someone who's makabel lashon hara. Where do we see in this pasuk that you're not allowed to speak lashon hara? I mean, you would think with a kal v'chomer, but the Gemara wants to say that you read lo tisa kari beinami lo tasi. Tasi means when you speak lashon hara. That's more of an active verb. And lo tisa means when you receive lashon hara. And in the very next pasuk it says, al teshes yodchim rosh alios eid chamas, a person who purges himself and false and testifies against his fellow Jew falsely, he, as a perjurer, fits into this pattern, which is equivalent to a lakel of tashlichen osa. Now the Meiri here on this sugya is baffled by Mechalel Mevazes HaMoedim, why is he considered an Ovid of Onizor? He's baffled by the fact that these three Averos make him into lakel of tashlichen osa. So in the first case he says the following. He says HaMevazes HaMoedos is Yesh Bezilzol HaMoed Tzad Kfira Be'emuna. There's a certain element of kfira here. He's denying the gmul v'onesh. He's denying the fundamental belief in reward and punishment. Now, why is someone who does malacha, let's say, on Chol HaMoed, denying gmul v'onesh? Right? The reward and punishment. The Meiri doesn't answer that question. He just assumes it. I would have suggested slightly different, that Shabbos and Moed are both part of the testimony of a Jew that God created the world. And if a person desecrates the Moed, then maybe he, in some way, he's denying... How do you say in English, a kofra, heretic, right? His heresy is that he's denying the creation of the world. And that's like an Oved Avodah Zarah. I don't know. Either way, it's very difficult. Then the Meiri tries to take a stab at what does it mean, Roy Lashlicho Lekelev. And the Meiri writes, Shekol Kayotze B'zeh Eino Bitzuras Adam. He has forfeited his image as a human being. V'eino roi li kore odom li achar hamoves, and therefore after he dies, he's nivshal kebehemos nidmu, he's like any other animal. When it dies, what do you do with the carcass? You feed it to the dogs. He doesn't address, again, the more specific question as to why these three averus are singled out to make this person forfeit his tzuras ha'adam and reduce him to the level of kibehemos nidmu, and therefore lakel of tashlichun also after he dies. So let's Rabosei make a note as to where we got up to. Do you see the Gemara Shtei Ritzuos? That's where we want to pick it up. And hopefully, I would say, I don't know, we're getting towards the end. That's all I'll say. We're not there yet, but okay. Any questions before we... Okay.